Welcome to Jackson's American Tales. I'm Jackson Jones. In this podcast, we're going to talk to ordinary people all about their extraordinary life stories. This week, we're going to be talking to a young woman from Wanakee, Wisconsin, Kay Cradawill, and follow her journey, which involves being forced to drop out of college due to health issues.
I was in the top 10% of my class, and to leave was heartbreaking.
Surviving domestic abuse.
He punched me in the face and threw me across the room.
Kay's story certainly does have its moments of tragedy, but what you will learn is that the human spirit does have an ability to persevere and the strength that lies inside someone. What are you doing right now?
Right now, I am running a business, trying to get it off the ground and get my feet wet, and I jumped in feet first.
What kind of business is this? Is this a water park business? You said feet wet and jumping in. What kind of business is this?
I do website design and marketing and promotions for small businesses, and I quit my job to do this.
Took a big leap with this one then.
That's why I'm saying I jumped in feet first.
What's the name of the company?
It's called Feed Your Business.
Feed Your Business.
Feed Your Business, because I started out doing mostly restaurants and bars. Mm-hmm. I've been branching out to just about anybody. I mean, I'm working for my accountant, my chiropractor, anybody that wants to expand their business.
That's awesome. We're going to get into how it is you got to feeding businesses and how it is you got into taking the leap of starting your own business. But we're going to start from the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm from Wanakee.
The only Wanakee in the world, they say.
The only Wanakee in the world.
What were you like as a kid?
Diligent.
Diligent? What do you mean?
I was kind of the perfect child. Like,
not to brag, but I was the kid that everyone wants to have.
I kind of was. I mean, I was in the top 10% of my class. I really just worried about my grades. My dad just showed me something that he had found with all of my extracurricular activities. And I looked at it and I said, holy crap, I did all of that. I did all of that. Like, I was in every club and I was a cheerleader for all sports. I was the baseball manager.
Now, cheerleading, were you a base or were you getting thrown in the air or was there none of that going on?
Oh, I was getting thrown.
You legit got thrown in the air?
Oh, I legit got thrown in the air. I'm 4'10".
Of course. I didn't want to be that guy to make an assumption that the young girl, like, there's no reason I can't be a base. I'm strong. Hear me roar.
I was a base, though, too.
Really? Did somebody call in sick?
Oh, no. I threw chicks on my shoulders, and I was like, sure. Because we were in the weight room as much as the football players are in the weight room.
You know, folks don't realize this, but literally the highest number of injuries in high school athletics is cheerleading. Very, very, it can be very, very, very dangerous.
Oh, I've gotten dropped so many times.
Okay, that was going to be my... So the going up part, you know, it was okay,
I got dropped so many times.
Really?
Oh yeah.
See, you would only drop me once, and I'd be like, not again, not again. Am I doing that?
Well, it definitely helped with my fear of heights, getting dropped.
Did you ever have any injuries from that?
Like
any broken bones? I mean, I'm guessing there's bruises and bumps, but anything bad?
Just bruises and bumps. My knees are shot, though.
Yeah.
Because you jump.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
They call it jumper's knee.
Oh, my knees are shot, and it's from not doing anything. They call it lazy knee. Similar, but oddly enough, the treatment for that is being lazy again. So it works.
That sounds like it's good for you.
So did you like school? Did you enjoy going to school?
Not even a little bit.
No, really? Why not?
I got bullied a lot.
After high school, did you plan on going to college? What was the path after that?
I went to the UW.
Okay, UW-Madison?
Mm-hmm.
To study?
Medicine. I was pre-med.
What kind of medicine were you studying? What was your goal?
My end goal was to be an anesthesiologist.
Anesthesiologist?
Mm-hmm.
That's somebody who knocks people out?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I got sick. I have endometriosis.
What's that?
It's a disease in your uterus. I had to have surgery, and so I had to drop out of my freshman year.
So what was that like that, you know, you get accepted to UW, which is no small feat. I mean, I think we take that for granted living here in Madison, that we have one of the best academic institutions in the world right outside of our front door.
That is, I mean, it was so hard to get into, and I was so, so proud to do it. And to leave was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But I had to. I moved back with my parents and went to METC for a couple semesters. And I just realized I didn't know what I wanted to do.
What were you studying there?
I started with nursing.
Are you good with poking people with needles and cleaning up after people and also getting yelled at a lot?
Well, I worked at both of the hospitals, Meritor and St. Mary's, for a long time. I don't know about needles. Maybe that would have been my downfall.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not good with needles?
I mean, I'm okay with getting them stuck in me, but poking somebody else, I don't know. Because then you have to actually look at it.
Yeah. Oh, you really got to. You can't blind that one. You can't like a.
Because when I get it done to me, I'm looking away. I'm looking away.
So now, wouldn't that have been a problem with being an anesthesiologist? Like, aren't needles kind of like the main part of that job?
No, they just put the mask
on. Oh, so you're going for that side then. You're like, hey, you call somebody else to put this needle stuff.
Oh, yeah. The nurses put the needles in.
You just go check to make sure the dose is right.
Yeah.
So how many years did you work as a nurse?
I wasn't a nurse.
Oh, you said you did. You said you were, or you worked at one of the hospitals.
I did. I was in registration.
Oh, okay.
I was in the ER at St. Mary's.
Oh.
Which was the best job I've ever had.
Really? So are you front desk? Like they come in and like, I'm bleeding out of my elbow. You got to help me.
Yes. But I was also bedside registration.
What's that?
So you go into their room. If they come in and they don't have time to register, or they don't have time to, they're coming in by ambulance or whatever, you go into their room and register them. I have seen some freaky stuff.
So that's what I was going to get at. I'm guessing you've seen the worst of humanity that way.
But working in the ER, you have to be kind of f***ed up.
I would imagine. Well, I mean, because you literally are seeing people at their worst. Nobody's going to the ER because it's Tuesday.
Yeah, but to enjoy it, you really have to really a different kind of person.
Now,
really enjoyed it.
So you just said that you're really a bleeped up kind of person.
I'm really. But all of us were, you know, we would have somebody come in with their finger cut off in the snowblower and it was still in the glove. And we were throwing the glove around going, look, the finger's still in the glove. The finger's still in the glove. And we're all like freaking out laughing about it.
My fingers hurt right now. I'm so squeamish. There is no way I could do that job.
There was a lady that came in one time, and she had been in a skiing accident, and her foot was pointed in the exact wrong direction.
Ooh.
I mean, like, upside down, wrong direction.
Oh, my God.
And she had had enough drugs at that point that she was like...
Did the doctor give her, or that she brought herself?
No, that the doctor
gave her. Okay, I didn't know if she... I know she, no, had, she knew
was,
a friend.
She was on, like, morphine or something. Yeah.
I'd hope
so. And I walked in and she went, is it bad? And I said, I'm going to be honest with you. It's pretty bad.
Don't look.
and she said, is it the worst thing you've ever seen? I said, I think it's probably the worst thing I've ever seen. She went, that's so cool. Because she was on so much morphine that she didn't even
I am uncomfortable and sweaty just hearing the story. There's no way I'd have been like, well, ma'am, we'll have to register you when I get done passing out and throwing up. Oh, my Lord. I have a friend that used to work at an emergency room, and he was an x-ray tech. And confirm or deny, confirm. or deny this. This is generally a family-friendly podcast. I'm going to warn you here about what's about to happen. How often do people come in with stuff stuck in their butt?
I had never seen it.
You never seen it?
No.
Really?
No.
He told me some stories.
I'd never seen it.
And he said that people would come in with all kinds of random stuff.
I've seen like the articles on Facebook and stuff like that. No, never seen it.
Yeah, he said he would see probably one a month.
No.
Which was an outside, which was an insane number. But he said their excuse always, always was they slipped. No matter what it was, they had always slipped. And he's like, I always wondered, why was that guy handling bowling pins with no pants on? Like, what was it that was going on? Well, I'm glad you didn't have to deal with that, because if the lady would have been like, is this the worst thing you've ever seen? You could have been like, no, buckle up. I'm going to tell you some stuff here.
No.
So did you ever see any kids come in with injuries and things?
Yeah.
Does that bother you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be a hard one to deal with.
We had a kid come in whose dad had rolled over on him in bed.
Oh, no. Not good.
That was rough.
Yeah.
That was really rough. And that's why I advocate against co-sleeping.
Yeah. How old was the kid?
Two.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think the people that work in our medical field don't get enough credit for. You know, we do the Radiothon every year, and we get a lot of pats on the back for going out and doing it. It's great. You know, we raise a lot of money for the American Family Children's Hospital. But I go home at the end of the day, and I'm there for 3 days. God. I don't come back for another year.
I can't imagine.
And people and not just a children's hospital, but in regular medical fields. You know, I used to date a gal that was a nurse, and she lost a few patients because these things happen. They get old and they pass away. But you get attached to them if they're there for like a week or 2 weeks, or if they're frequent flyers.
When you posted about that 13-year-old, oh my gosh.
That absolutely broke my heart. But, you know, what I have to remind people is that there was somebody that was her nurse for every single day while she was in there that now walks past that empty room. You know, it messed me up. I have a 13-year-old daughter. I think anyone that has a kid, it would mess them up too. But we didn't have to spend our time with them and get to know them and break the news to mom and dad that this was about to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, people that work in any kind of, even in registration like you do, you're the first line of defense when people come into the, when you were, you know, you're the first line of defense. When people come in, you're the first face that you see, and, you know, you got to be in a good mood, and it's like working at the DMV where everybody's bleeding.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, nobody goes in the ER on their best day.
That's exactly right.
They go into the ER on their worst day.
Yeah, yeah. You're not like me. You don't go to the ER because you got gingivitis and don't have any medical coverage. You need somebody to give you some pills. I've did that before. Yeah. Went to the doctor. I had gingivitis. I knew I had gingivitis. So I went to the went to the ER. It was immediate care. And I said, yeah, I think I got gingivitis. And the doctor said, well, why don't you go to the dentist? And I said, well, I don't have dental coverage. And he goes, well, what do you want me to do? And I went, it's a mouth infection. And he goes, I'll be damned it is. And he was like, really good move there. And I went, thanks so much, because it would have cost me so much more to go to the dentist than it would have to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
So what did you do, and why did you get out of working in the medical field?
Well, my ex-husband decided to open a food cart.
A food cart?
Yes.
Really? That's something I've always wanted to do.
Don't.
That was the quietest. That was the, don't. Okay. Now I won't. My dreams have now been squashed.
Sorry for breaking your dreams.
So was it one of those things where you were married at the time, correct?
I was.
And so it was one of the things like, hey, we need all hands on deck to go make this happen?
Yep.
Really?
And then I got pregnant with my daughter.
Okay. Did you have any kids before this time?
Well, Max.
Oh, yep. Okay. I knew this, but. You know, they didn't know that. So,
you had
one child.
I had one
already.
Child. Yep.
You got pregnant, and then your husband decided to open a food cart.
Well, it was already opened, but while I was on maternity leave, he told me that if I booked the crap out of him, because I was doing all of the marketing and promotions and booking and everything for him, if I booked the crap out of him, I wouldn't have to go back to work.
Hmm.
And I did.
Oh. And then so you didn't go back to work at the hospital?
No, I did not.
So now, was this a food cart that you pull behind a truck, or just something like you drive or
no,
like you push?
Pull behind the truck.
Okay. So then what happened with the food cart? Were you guys out doing that, making that happen? How was that?
We were very, very successful.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, that's a difficult business because it's competitive. You got to move around from place to place. Yeah. I mean, it's like owning a restaurant that literally is on a trailer, and running a restaurant isn't easy.
I give D a lot of credit.
Yeah?
Because she discovered us. She promoted us.
She did. I remember coming into the break room one time and there being a bunch of your food in there.
Yeah.
And radio people, we love free food.
Yeah.
And that was my day. I was like, oh, heck yeah. I don't know what these things come from, but booyah, booyah, booyah. Yeah. And then I met you and I was like, oh, how wonderful is this?
Yeah.
So how long did you guys do the food cart business?
Well, it's still going.
Oh, okay. So the food cart survived, but the marriage did not?
Yes.
Now, is that something that you're willing to get into?
Yes.
Okay. So what happened?
He was very abusive.
Physically, mentally, or both?
Both.
How long were you married?
8 years.
How long did the abuse, when did the abuse start?
I walked down the aisle with bruises.
Really? Now, I have to ask you this because, as an interviewer, and I don't mean any offense, you know, by any of it. I don't want anyone listening to think that I'm being offensive to you at all.
I'm ready to answer your question.
Why did you marry him?
Because he promised he would change.
And you believed it?
I did. He told me that he was going to go and see a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And get on medication.
Anger issues? Depression, things like that?
Narcissistic personality disorder is what all three psychologists diagnosed him with.
So he did go to a psychologist?
He went to three psychiatrists.
And was he on medication?
Yep.
And it wasn't helping?
Nope. Because there's no treatment for narcissistic personality disorder.
Well, because they're perfect at everything. So how could you treat that?
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So when was the first time the abuse happened?
Probably a couple months before our wedding.
Do you remember the night, the day? Do you remember what happened?
No, just grabbing and pushing and.
Did you guys have a very argumentative?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty volatile relationship?
Oh, yeah.
And was it always that way? Like, even when you were dating?
Yep.
And then it just eventually escalated?
Yeah. I mean, narcissists, they pull you in with their personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they have you hooked, they start all the abuse.
The manipulating and things like that?
Oh, gosh. He isolated me from all my friends and... Yeah, I wasn't allowed to see so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so because they didn't want me to be with him.
Now, to get into the mind of someone who has to go through that, how did you justify this in your head? Because you're a very smart gal, and you're obviously, you know, you're really great in school. You know, you went to, you had a good head on your shoulders. Obviously, your dad kind of put you on the right. How did you justify this?
Gosh, I don't even know, Jackson. I just, after Max was born, it was for Max, stay with Max. And then he threatened Max. He threatened, if you call the cops, we'll both go to jail, and then Max will go to foster care. If you file for divorce, I'll get custody, and you'll lose Max. He used my child against me a lot. In the very first, it was all the promises to change.
Mm-hmm.
I promise to change. And then after Max came, which was very quickly after our wedding, I was pregnant walking down the aisle. I didn't know. He just said, I'm going to take Max. Max is going to be mine.
And then you said, I'll deal with what I have to go through so he's not with him.
Because I knew at least then I could protect Max.
And then how? And then you had your second child. How far apart are Max and your second child?
Max and Lucy are 7 years apart.
7 years apart. So did you get? Were you worried when you found out you were pregnant with Lucy? Was it happy? What was that like?
He had been wanting a second child for a long time, so I thought that maybe it would fix things. The stigma of abuse is just so great that mm-hmm. people don't understand it. You just do what you have to do to survive. Because you're so brainwashed that you really think that something's going to happen to you or your kids.
Did anybody in your family have any idea this was going on?
The ones that did were cut out of my life.
He figured out that they were starting to get hip to the jive and yeah. kind of cut them right out? Do you recognize the person that you were back yeah. then when you look back?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Oh my gosh. And I've been working in therapy because I'm so angry with myself for letting it happen.
You blame yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
Why?
Because I'm an intelligent woman who shouldn't have let it happen.
You're not the only one that let that happen.
Well, I know.
You know, hindsight's 20/20.
I know, but you know. Still, I let it happen.
I would disagree with that. I don't think you let it happen. I think you're manipulated into it happening.
Well, I know, and that's what I'm trying to work on in therapy. Yeah. But
so, how long were you married?
8 years.
What was the final straw? What was that's it? That's enough.
I was trying to leave. I was packing everything up, all the kids' stuff, packing bags and getting ready to leave. And he picked Lucy up out of her crib. She was 6 months old. And he said, "You can leave, but you're not taking her with you." And every time I tried to get her from his arms, he kicked me or hit me. I went upstairs to pack my bag. And with her in his arms, he punched me in the face and then threw me across the room. I got up after I came to, and I got in his face and I said, "Put her down, put her down." He threw her on the bed, and then I said, "Now you can do whatever you want to me, just leave her alone." And then my dad's best friend came into the house and yelled his name and got him downstairs. And I got Lucy into the car seat and I ran.
And what did he do?
He sat and talked to my dad's best friend.
Did he have any idea what was going on inside the house when he got there? Was he just stopping by to make a visit, or did he know something was wrong?
She knew I had called my dad earlier to let him know that things were going bad. And my dad was stuck at work. So he called her and she came over.
So did you tell your dad how bad things had gotten? Did you tell him what it was that was going on?
Mm-hmm. I told him that he was basically holding my daughter hostage.
Were the police involved?
He was arrested.
That same day?
Yep.
Did you call the police or did the friend?
My dad's best friend called.
If she didn't, do you think you would have called the police?
I had tried. He took my phone and threw it across the room.
But if you could have gotten, like, let's say you could have gotten outside, do you think you would have called the police then? Because some people in that situation, you know, they don't do that because once again, they're so trapped inside. You're, you know, you're trapped. It's like being a mime. You're trapped inside of an invisible box. Do you think you would have been able to make that call?
Yes. When my daughter was involved, yes.
Do you, and how old was Max when all this was going on?
Max was 7.
Did he understand what it was that was happening?
He wasn't there.
He wasn't. Did he? Was he ever around for any of it?
Yes.
And did he see it?
Yep.
And did he know what it was that was going on?
Yep.
So when you eventually did leave and he did go to jail for, you know, however, whenever, when
two
he
hours.
Was, 2 hours. Wonderful court system we have.
Yep.
When he went in there, did you have to explain to Max? Because he's getting at the age, he's, I mean, 7, 8, you know.
It was hard to explain to him why Dad was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he understood.
What did you tell him?
Well, there was a 72-hour protect order.
What's that?
Well, when somebody's arrested for domestic violence, there's an instant 72-hour protect order. So he was not allowed to come anywhere near us for 72 hours.
Okay. And then were you able to get your stuff out at that time? What was going on during that 72 hours in your head?
Well, he was on drugs at the time as well.
What kind of drugs?
Coke.
Ooh, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was still trying. In my head, it was so stupid. I was still trying to keep him safe. I was trying to find him and figure out what he was doing and make sure that he wasn't going to, like, overdose or anything like that. And when I tried to get him into rehab, and he refused. And when I realized that that was not going to happen, I ran up to the courthouse, and I got a restraining order.
Really? Mm-hmm. Now, how difficult / easy is it to get a restraining order?
Well, based on the evidence that I had, pretty easy.
Do they charge you for that? Like, any money? Is it financially? Is it cost?
There is a cost, but I qualified because I had no job at the time, technically. I qualified for a fee waiver.
So you got a restraining order.
Mm-hmm.
You have the kids.
Yep.
He's in jail for a little while, but he's back out now.
Yep.
You have no job. He's running and owns the family business, and I'm assuming the finances.
Yep.
What happened after that? What happened there?
He withdrew a large amount of money from our bank accounts. So I went down to the bank and opened a new account and transferred all of the money from all of the accounts into my account, which he still accuses me of stealing all of the money. Yeah.
So then you had that. So where did you go?
I was home. He wasn't allowed there, so.
Oh, so, okay, so take your food cart and get the hell out.
Oh, yeah. It was gone.
And then he was now, and then did he ever come back? Did he ever try to come back after that?
No.
No?
No, he was smarter than that.
You didn't have to call the cops on him? Because usually those instances, you know, there's a lot of women, I think, that don't do anything because,
I would have loved to.
You know, if you do this, you know, if you call the cops, man, I'm going to kill you. Any of that kind of stuff going on?
No, I would have loved to. The cops on him.
I would have loved an opportunity to.
Oh, God bless America. I mean, because he was on probation, and then his probation would have been revoked, and then 2 years in jail, not 2 hours.
So now what was he on probation for? Was he on probation for the domestic abuse against – okay, I didn't know if he had any other kind of – did he have a criminal record other than that? Was he getting in trouble? Was he a riffraffer?
Oh, yeah. He had drug charges and OWIs and –
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's a dirtbag.
Even with 2 OWIs, drug charges, you get picked up for domestic abuse, you still get released 2 hours later.
Uh-huh. Yep. Wow. And then only charged with two years of probation.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yep. So what was your next move after that?
Gosh, let's see. So then I picked myself up by the bootstraps and I said, well, I need a job. I went out and found a job.
What kind of job were you doing?
I was bartending.
Oh, okay.
At Treads, right where you found me.
Yes, that was where, yes, that was where I met you at. Absolutely.
Yeah, I had a friend that had opened up a bar and I went down there and I said, I need a job desperately. Please, will you hire me? And I was working there. And then I thought, gosh, you know, I've been doing this booking and marketing and promotions and website design for this business for so long. I could do this for other people. What can I do? And I researched it and I set up an LLC and I put a GoFundMe page out there. I had a nice bearded gentleman come in and give me $300 from his foundation, and I set up an LLC.
I bet that guy was weird, though.
Oh, he was so weird.
Yeah, we're thinking about the same guy.
I made business cards, and I hit the pavement.
So what was the feeling that you had while, you know, your husband of 8 years is now, you have a restraining order against him. You have only the select amount of money that it is that you've got, you know, there. You're working at a bar. You're out on your own again. What were some of the feelings that you had going on?
Sheer fear.
Yeah?
I mean.
What were you afraid of?
Failing my kids. I mean, God, you're gonna make me cry again. They're the most important thing in my life. I don't want to fail them. I want to give them everything I can possibly give them. That was just my biggest fear. And then anger, you know?
Anger at who?
I'm going to swear again. Dipshit. Because he put me in that position.
So what were the first steps of getting your own business going? What's that like when you're like, okay, because there's a fear to do it. But uh-huh. Then when you're like, all right, I'm going to do this. What is that feeling like?
Well, I mean, the feeling that I have right now, because I just actually quit my job to pursue this full time.
What other job were you working as well as doing this?
I was working at Monk's.
Oh, you're still waitressing?
I was.
Oh, and bartending as well, yes.
Well, no, I was hosting at Monk's.
But, oh, okay.
Gosh, that's just, it's scary. Because I literally just jumped in feet first. You know, like, I got to do this.
I don't mean this sound bad, but a backup plan, did that even pop into your head? Like, we better think of worst case scenario. We better have ourselves ready. You did go after that. So you actually did some real smart person things like planning.
Oh yeah. My dad said, if this doesn't work, what are you going to do? He said, in 6 months, if this doesn't work, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to go back to work. Okay, that's all I wanted to hear.
What did your dad and your family and your friends say when you told them about everything that was going on in your marriage?
In my marriage?
Yeah.
Just
to go back to that real quick, because I forgot to ask you that.
No problem. You hit it well.
What did you feel? What did you think about that when they said that to you?
Yes, I did. I hit it well because that was what I had to do. Because the people in my life previously who found out about it were ostracized.
Did you reintroduce those people into your life? Were you able
yes.
to? You did?
Yeah, most of them, yes.
What was that feeling like to know that you could do that again?
Oh, I like, one of my best friends who he cut out of my life, I called and she said, I knew and I'm so sorry that I let you out of my life and I let you go through that.
Were you mad at her?
No.
Okay, yeah.
God bless, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
Of course.
No, I was worried she would be mad at me.
Why would she be mad at you?
Because I cut her out of my life.
Yeah, but it was like you cut her out of her life because she took the last piece of cake.
Well, I know, but I don't know. I lost some of my family members that still don't talk to me. There are some that still won't forgive me.
Even though they now know what's going on?
Yep.
Yeah, to hell with those people. That's the way I see it. Good riddance of bad rubbish right there.
I suppose. But, you know, the most important person in my life is my dad, and that didn't happen, so.
What did your dad say when you told him exactly what it was that was going on?
My dad saw it, a little bit of it. Gosh, I don't know if I want to say this on the air. My dad and my ex were fighting one day, and I tried to get in the middle of it. And my ex told me, shut the F up, you bee.
Hmm.
And my dad grabbed him by the throat and threw him against the wall.
That's what a good dad does.
And said, if I ever hear you talk to my daughter like that again, I'm going to kill you.
Reasonable. Very.
But my dad is just about the kindest man in the world and always gives everybody the reasonable doubt.
Kindness to a fault.
To a fault. He always, every situation that we've been in through this divorce, he's always said, oh, he's never going to do that. And then he does it.
Yeah.
Oh, he would never do that. And then he does it. He's
well intended, but maybe a little naive, possibly.
I don't want to say naive. I just want to say kind.
Yeah. Sometimes you get good people in the world, and they don't want to see the bad in the world. They just want to see the good in somebody. He's misguided. He's going to come back around.
I think he's just never really seen evil in its true form.
In the ways that you have.
No.
So you're running your own business. What was it like that day that you went in to your boss and you said, here's my 2-week notice, or this is my last shift, deuces, whatever, however it is that you did it. What was that like when you made that decision? I'm getting up this morning. I'm going in and I'm not jumping feet first and I'm jumping head first into this.
I jumped seriously head first.
Off a skyscraper.
I put in my 2 weeks notice. And then Lucy was sick, so I had to call in sick for a couple of days. And then I just said, screw it. I'm done.
I have done that. When I've put my 2-week notice in before, I've told employers, like, hey, look. Like, anytime I've come in, I'm like, you're not doing anything. I'm like, yeah, because I just quit. Like, I'm not coming. Like, if I'm going to be here for 2 more weeks, if you think I'm going to be doing the best work that you're going to get out of me, you're wrong about that. Because in 2 weeks, I don't live here. I don't work here anymore.
I couldn't bring myself to go back in. I was just like, I'm just done.
So what was that feeling like? Was that like,
that was, again, sheer fear. Like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? But Max, I told Max what I was doing, and he said...
He said, quiet, Mom, I'm playing Fortnite.
No, he said, Mom, you're going to rock it.
That's awesome.
You're going to do great.
A good boy.
Oh, he's such a good boy. That was all I needed.
So now that you're trying to do, your own thing, how do you feel about yourself now?
Oh, I don't know.
How do you feel about the decisions that you're making now? Are you happy with them? Are you scared of them? Are you surprised by yourself, by any of this?
I mean, I feel like I put my big girl panties on, and I'm just hiking myself up by my bootstraps.
No, they're just trying to make it happen.
Yeah. No, yeah.
So you also do something else. You have been doing a blog.
I have.
Tell me about the blog. What's it called, and where can it be found at?
My blog is archangel-mama.blogspot.com.
Okay, what's it about?
It is kind of about everything that I've been through and hiking myself up by my bootstraps.
So do you, what's the purpose of the blog? Is it to inform other people? Is it to get things off your chest? Is it both? What is it? What's the main goal of your blog?
I have unselfish and selfish purposes.
That's perfect. That's great. That's human. Absolutely.
For both of it. A lot of it is getting it off of my chest, but my biggest goal has been to try and reach out to other people who might think that they're alone.
Have you seen, has people come forward?
Yeah.
They have?
Yeah. I've had a few people, and not just from my blog, but I do a lot of, during November, sorry, you made me cry, and now my nose is tripping. I do a lot of posts during November Domestic Violence Awareness Week about my story and what I've been through. And I've had a lot of people come forward to me and tell me how my story has affected them.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, justified.
Yeah?
Oh, truly, truly justified, because I know that if I would have been able to read something like this or know that I wasn't alone when I was there, it might have changed the history of my life.
What would you say to, I don't know how old you were when you, how old were you when you got married?
30.
30. What would you say to 30-year-old Kay when the first instance of abuse happened? If you could go back into a time machine and have a one-on-one conversation with that version of yourself, what would you say to that woman?
You're gonna make me cry again. I would say, you're not crazy. You're not alone. And it's not your fault. It's not your fault. No matter what you did to make him mad, it's not your fault.
Do you have a hard time realizing that nowadays, or do you?
No, not anymore.
Not anymore?
No, it didn't help that he had a mother that I would call in my worst days and tell her what he did, and she would say, what did you do to deserve it?
That's a terrible thing to hear.
Nothing.
Of course. There's nothing anybody could do to deserve that. Nobody deserves to be treated like that. Now, I've seen other people interviewed, and I've seen discussions about domestic violence, and something the interviewer always asks is, you know, if there's a young woman that's going through this right now, what would you say to her? But I want to know, if there's a guy listening right now, and he's doing this, and his people don't know about it, what would you say to him?
There's nothing you can say to him, because he probably already knows what he's doing, and he doesn't care that it's wrong.
You think they're possibly unreachable?
For the most part, yeah. I've done so much research on narcissistic personality disorder and domestic violence that most abusers will never change. Narcissistic personality disorder is untreatable, uncurable. There's no cure. There's no pill. There's no nothing. Even therapy will not help them. So I don't think that there's anything that I could say to a man who's doing this to another woman.
Some of these things are genetic. Are you worried about Max?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Max has been in therapy for the last 3 years. He's got PTSD.
It's terrible to think a boy that little. PTSD. You know, you hear, you know, when you hear PTSD, you think about a six foot four strapping 25-year-old in fatigues. You don't think about a little boy.
Yeah, a 10-year-old little boy. Yeah. He's in therapy for PTSD. And I'm just trying everything in my power to break this cycle. Because there's a cycle. It's a complete cycle. And when he's mean to his sister, or he pinches her, or pushes her, or whatever, I keep trying to tell him, remember, we don't want her to grow up the way that you did. We don't want her to have to go through that.
Is there any part of you that worries that, you know, there's the not noticing enough, but then there is the noticing too much, and maybe, and I'm not saying this is happening, but this is a legit question, making a mountain out of a molehill with some things, like, you know, is there something that worries, like, I need to figure out how to balance this out right? Because, you know, he's a kid and kids do things, but there's these signs, but they're not signs. Like, is that difficult to deal with?
That is one of the hardest parts about it, is trying not to see his father in him and trying not to think that that's what's going on. Like, that's because, especially because he's, on the other hand, he's just the sweetest kid on earth. He really is just the sweetest kid on earth. He does stuff for all of us that is just wonderful. But then 10 minutes later, he'll be mean.
Yeah. Now, you clearly have, you know, been through it. And, you know, you're coming out the other side, you know. Not the, you didn't come out clean, you know, most rarely do. But I watch my favorite show on TV is Forged in Fire. And people take these crude pieces of metal and they take them and they put them in this hot fire and they beat them with hammers and they completely change what it is that happened to them. But then when they're done, you get a nice polish on them.
Yeah.
And end up being something completely different. And not that they were better for what happened, but the fact that they survived it made that metal stronger. The fire it went into made it stronger, and that's exactly what you did. Yeah. You walked through a fire, and you came out. You're a battle axe now.
Well, that's the title of my blog, One Mama's Journey Through the Fire and Back.
How often do you update your blog?
I've been kind of laxed at it because now I'm working at my business.
You're trying to run what? Trying to run some business all by yourself, and now you ain't got time to type. What's up with that?
probably about once, twice a week.
Once or twice a week.
Yeah,
that's great. So, what are your hopes for the future? What's on the horizon here?
God bless. I don't even freaking know. I really don't.
Hey, that's a good thing, though. You know why? It's an empty page in front of you, right? Isn't it? And that's what it is. It's an unwritten story, right?
I know. It's just, you know, taking care of my kids and feeding in my business. Feed your business.
There you go. Yes, yes.
And just helping people. That's what gives me the most joy in my life, is helping people. Every time somebody texts me or messages me and says, gosh, I read your blog or I read something you posted and I went through that, I went through the same thing, or I'm going through the same thing. And I have girls texting me from my single mom's page at like midnight saying, I need your help. I need your help. What should I do right now? And it just, even if I'm sleeping, I'm like, okay. What, you know?
Your single mom today. Just talk about that real quick, because that's how I found you.
That is how you found me. Through Miss Kyle.
Yes, yes. A very, very wonderful, wonderful person that told me about you. And then my nonprofit, Jackson's Community Action Fund, we did what it is that we could do, just trying to make a little drop in the pond to cause a ripple effect. And you know what happened? You're rippling across that lake, you know, like you're making waves right now. So tell us about the single moms group.
So I was on a mom's page that was kind of judgy.
Wait a minute. People are judgy?
Moms are judgy? No, I wouldn't even think
You get right out of here with that.
and very over exclusive.
Got to have the right pair of yoga pants.
And they had like real people problems, which first.
What's a real person problem?
So my husband dressed the child in stripes, and we're all the rest of us are wearing stripes, and it's too matchy-matchy for our Christmas picture. Really?
Well, I mean,
are you really?
How honestly could you sleep at night knowing that your striped Christmas, you're looking like a family of candy canes going out to the world? You just can't have that, Kay.
That was how Kyle and I became friends, because she blasted this girl on the mom's page and got kicked off the mom's page.
So this is the bad girls of mom, the bad ladies of mom's page.
We're the bad moms. We are the bad moms. So I got inspired by that, because she texted me. She was like, I got kicked off the mom's page. And I was like, oh, for the love of Pete. Okay, well, we need a single mom's page for real world problems.
Yeah.
Like that we're experiencing. Because all of these stay-at-home, prissy moms don't understand what we're going through.
Yeah. If they're doing a job every single day, being mom and dad, you know, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And working, you know, 40 hours a week or...
Yep. Plus.
You know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started a single mom's page. Thank you, Kyle.
What's the name of your single mom's page?
Single Moms.
Oh, okay. Oh, so Facebook Single Moms?
Yes.
So if someone, is it an invite-only group? Like if someone was...
It is a secret group, yes.
Okay.
Because we've had people come on
infiltrate?
There. Infiltrate? Yes. Infiltrate, yes.
Infiltrators are the worst.
So you would have to become my friend or somebody else's friend.
Gotcha.
On Facebook, and I would invite you.
But, you know, honestly, that is a way to keep a safe network.
Well, we did have a couple of infiltrators.
Yep.
And we had a little bit of a debate about whether to turn it secret or keep it public. I felt like we should keep it public because then everybody could find it. But a lot of the girls were irritated by the infiltrators, so I made it secret.
It's probably for the best.
It is.
You know, and that way you have, it's kind of like why moms lock themselves in the bathroom with a bag of Twizzlers.
That's what I did last
You can't time. Just... You can't just sit in the living room and eat them Twizzlers, because infiltrators, kids.
I didn't have a bag of Twizzlers, but it might have been a glass of wine.
I'm not sharing this with you. I found a couple glasses of wine. Kids are a lot more easy to deal with if you give it to them.
Well, yeah. After Lucy wasn't going to bed at all, I just locked myself in the bathroom.
You guys have the rest of the house. I'll be in here.
Yeah.
If you need me, that's too bad.
Yeah. Peace him out.
You know, I think that, you know, you have an amazing story. You know, there are some sad things that are in there. And I think there are some things that are, you know, honestly kind of chilling that's in everyday life for some people. And I'm glad that you were able to get out of that. And I'm glad that you were able to come on and tell your story about this, because I think that, you know, it's no guarantee that someone's going to hear this and that they're going to go, oh, I got to do something. But even if there's a tiny chance.
Oh, I sure as heck hope so.
Even if there's a slim chance. Even if it just puts the idea inside someone's head for the first time. Yeah. Or if it adds another straw.
You are not crazy. You are not at fault. This is not your fault. You're not the crazy one. That is the message that I just want to get through to everybody. You're not the crazy one. No matter how many times you've been told that you're the crazy one, you're not the crazy one. No matter how many times you've been told that it's your fault, it's not your fault.
And there are people out there that care about you. There are people out there that want to help you. There are people out there who love you, who will protect you.
Yep.
You know, I tell my daughter all the time, because I think one thing that a lot of guys use in this is, if you tell anyone, I will hurt you.
Yep.
Or I will hurt someone that you love. Yep. And I constantly tell my daughter, no one can ever hurt me. They can never hurt me. So you always tell me. If something's going on, nobody can hurt me. I'm made out of Teflon. Ain't nothing they can do to me. So no matter what they say, if someone's telling you that, find someone. They will help you.
Yeah.
Don't live that life. Yeah. I mean, I bet you wish you could have taken all of those. I mean, you lost 8 years.
Yeah. I lost 8 years, but I gained 2 beautiful kids. As much as Lucy the monster makes me crazy, I gained 2 beautiful kids.
You know, and also, and you gained a lot of strength too. And, you know, back to what we were talking about the radiothon, I talked to parents and, parents have lost kids. And one thing that they say is, if our story will help another parent, mm-hmm. if what we went through will help so another family doesn't go through this or has an easier time,
absolutely.
Then it was worth it. It was terrible at the time, but something good came out of it. And you're definitely making something good come out of this.
I totally agree in that. And that's the thing that gives me strength is helping other people, having something good come out of it other than my 2 beautiful, monstrous kids.
Well, now let's help other people feed their business. Where do we get information about Feed Your Business?
So I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
Feed Your Business.
Just facebook.com/feedyourbusiness?
Yes.
Okay.
And also feedyourbusiness.net.
Okay.
Is my website.
Type that into the Google system. It'll pop up right there.
Sir.
The worldwide internets.
Yes, sir. Also want to give a shout out to Days. Days was a big source of support to me.
And explain what Day. Explain what Dais is real quick before we go.
Domestic Abuse Intervention Services.
And they're there to help you if?
Anything. They have a 24-hour helpline, which I called more than 24 hours a day. They gave me all of the resources that I needed. They helped me find a lawyer. They just gave me support.
The best term I can use, I've worked with Dais, actually. So the best term I can use is to describe Dais and what it is that they do. And this is going to seem like an aggressive term. Militant.
Yes.
They're militant.
They very
about
are.
Getting you help. And you need militant on your side for these kind of things. It's D-A-I-S, correct?
D-A-I-S.
D-A-I-S. Yep. And if you type that into the Google system, you'll have all the information you get right there. And these people, they got your back.
They're freaking awesome.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So thank you so much again for coming in. Thank you so much for Feed Your Business. I'm sorry that I made you cry. I'm sorry I don't have any tissues, but I used up all of our tissue budget on my beef jerky budget.
Yeah, well, where's the beef jerky?
I ate all of it.
You jerk.
See, exactly. That's what I'm saying here. That's what I'm saying. Well, thank you so much, Kay, and thank you so much for listening to another episode of Jackson's American Tales, Ordinary People with Extraordinary Life Stories. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Jackson's American Tales. Please click share, especially if you know anyone who might be dealing with the same things that Kay went through. Domestic abuse is a very serious situation, and there is help out there for those that need it. If you know something, don't let it go ignored. Say something. Help those who need it. Coming up next week on Jackson's American Tales, we're going to be joined by former youth softball and tennis coach Jamie Midthin. Being a youth coach isn't easy these days.
The culture of youth sports has changed drastically since I played. I graduated high school in 96 from Wanakee.
The coach is going to talk about the trials and tribulations of youth sports and what it's like losing a parent.
That was the moment he realized Dad wasn't coming home.
This episode is full of laughs, tears, and a whole lot of inspiration.